Going to speak to Alexander Langlands now on his book, Craft, How Traditional Crafts Are About More Than Just Making. Good afternoon to you, Alexander. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Dave? All right?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. Great to have you on. And I'm saying that name correctly, Emma, because our modern term would be craft, of course, you know, but the old-fashioned term would be craft. Is that right?
Yeah, craft. I'm happy with that. I use craft or craft, just as long as it's not craft.
Well, I'm from Derby, so it's always craft. Anyway. But anyway, so, yeah, there we go. It's quite interesting at the moment because there is a bit of a renaissance with, you know, in this world of mass production. People want the artisan stuff and they want the craft, you know, homemade stuff as well. So there's kind of a bit of a, is there a bit of a revival of this kind of thing, or is this, are you looking more at what goes beyond some of the stuff we see today?
No, I think actually what we're seeing today, some of that revival, is the fact that I think people are looking beyond craft as just something you kind of do. You know, I think we've slightly over-fetishized the kind of making element in craft, and actually it's about more than that. In some ways, I mean, it sounds a bit crass, it's sort of lifestyle in many ways. We're seeking tradition. You know, we're seeking, I wouldn't say luxury, but we're looking for quality.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in our lives today, there's so much on offer. It's about purchasing discernibly. But I try and, you know, when I talk about traditional crafts, I try and explore the kind of wisdom, if you like, the sort of lost knowledge behind many of our crafts, how they used to make sense and how the direction we're sometimes taken in today doesn't quite make sense. And I cite leaf blowers as one example, you know, the battery-powered pepper grinder as another example, where we've kind of slightly over-mechanized our world to the point where we're suffering from a disconnect in society.
I kid you not, where we are in Spain, it's a very nice weather, of course, on the Costa del Sol, but we do get quite a lot of breeze here. And one of our other presenters was talking on his show about how he was coming into the radio station. I've seen this myself, and there's literally a guy with a leaf blower, and the gales are whipping up around him, and it's just a futile experience that he's involved with. That absolutely futile. So but for some reason he's getting paid by the hour, and he's walking around with it, and he's looking like he's doing something.
And making a lot of noise doing it as well.
But interesting, I mean, I know even for us, we're trying to get back to nature, I suppose, a little bit more. And we've got this an old log burner fire that we have. And even now, it's very much down to, you know, we'll go and collect stuff now in the forest near where we live just to get the fire going. And also, it's all about the quality of the wood. You know, don't just go for the cheap. So people are far more, I think these are becoming far more fashionable now, these kind of things, and getting back to doing stuff in the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and in the great outdoors, you know, I think that's part of it. I think there is a theme in the book about disconnect, and we're slightly disconnected from the outdoors, the rural world. Gone are the days now where we can go out and plough a field or cut hay or hedge or dry a stone wall when we're so disconnected. But actually, those crafts and skills, they're in us all. You know, we have evolved as a species to be makers. It's how we express ourselves. It's also how we enjoy ourselves. It's how we wind down and relax. And I think, you know, one of the kind of social ills in society at the moment, we talk about well-being and, you know, issues with mental health. You know, I think there is a connection between issues of mental health and the fact that so many of us, particularly young people, are just spending too much time just pressing buttons and staring at screens. You know, we need to get out there. We need to use our bodies to make and to do and to be. And I think in doing so, it will be better for us.
I took my little two-year-old out into the forest the other day, and my five-year-old enjoys it as well, just picking up pine cones and all to get the fire going. And you feel like, man, make fire. You feel like you're going back to your roots a little bit, you know. It does feel good to be out there and doing it.
It does. That's the thing, you know. You're breathing fresh air, you're with each other, you're engaging, you're discovering, you're finding out. My little boy's the same. We got pine cones in the front drive, and he brings them up for the fire, and then we go and put them in, and I start the fire, but he's allowed to throw them on. And what you're doing is you are being engaged there in a timeless activity that goes back hundreds of thousands of years. And it's what makes us, and it makes us happy. And through that process, you not only bond, but you understand where your heat source comes from. You have a more direct connection. And I think you connect with the innate human being within you.
Yeah. And I noticed as well, with Christmas coming in the last few years, decorations are far more natural looking now. You know, you got the pine cones on the tree, that sort of thing, and kind of natural colours coming in. Whereas when we were kids, we used to have these big, like plasticky looking shiny Christmas decorations hanging off the ceiling, which you don't see anymore. And so there is that kind of shift, isn't there, in people's mentality now? I think to have nature in the house makes you feel good.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is authenticity as well. We have got sick to death of fake stuff. You know the fold out Christmas tree that we used to have when we were younger. You know, it's laughable now. Obviously, there are implications for growing Christmas trees just for the sake of Christmas. Yeah. You know, there are implications of the environment. My Christmas tree, I will go and dig it back up again, because every year I put it back out in the garden. It grows on a little bit. I'll dig it out again, pot it up, and bring it back in the house.
Yeah.
So that's my kind of workaround for that. But there's no reason why ivy, holly, all these things that do grow back year on year can't be used to decorate the homestead. And actually, in the book, I talk about how to make a faggot from faggot wood. So just binding up sticks, dried sticks from the garden, bind them up to make a faggot, which will burn really well on the fire. The Yule faggot, or the Yuletide faggot, is a really good way of celebrating Christmas in an incredibly traditional way, but using stuff really that's windfall and or has been clipped from the hedgerows earlier in the year.
Well, tell us a bit more about that. What was the meaning behind that originally then?
Well, we've all heard of the kind of burning of garlands on the Christmas fire, and it's something you used to do. It's in fact recorded in classical times, 1st century BC. There are records of garlands being burnt on fires, and we've got it in medieval times, right up to the present day. You know, at the end of Christmas, you take that garland from that you've been hanging on the front of your front door, or hanging up in the house, and you bundle it up and you burn it on the fire. And sometimes you might sprinkle the ashes on your garden or in your orchard as a sort of blessing, if you like, for an offering to the gods in the hope of abundance. It's a very, very traditional thing. The Christmas fire is incredibly traditional, and there are ways in which we can still engage with it in a sustainable way, and that Yuletide faggot, sometimes called the ashen log down in the West Country, it's one way of engaging with that process of lighting the Christmas fire, bringing light into the hearth, into the centre of the house, in the deep, the bleak midwinter, if you like, and there's a craft to it. There's a craft to a good Christmas fire.
And again, it's so atmospheric as well, some of this stuff, because we do, I think, as winter comes in, and even here in kind of more southern climes, we still kind of go, you know, it gets colder in the evening for us. We've acclimatized to Spanish weather, so we build fires and we kind of, you know, hibernate a bit more than we do in the summer, of course. And is there any other Christmas traditions that you have in there, or any craft making from Christmas time?
Well, no, there's a handful of things about winter traditions and things to do at winter time. It's not necessarily geared towards Christmas time. But actually, a while ago, I did a handful of short videos with my old friends, Ruth Goodman and Peter Ginn, from the Victorian Farm and Edwardian Farm series. We did, for Victorian Farm, a handful of videos, which are still available on YouTube, where we make Christmas crackers. I show how to make traditional mince pies. I show how to make a traditional Christmas punch as well.
Oh, fantastic.
And those videos, they're all still available. So you can do it in a 19th century style. You can make traditional mince pies, which of course would have had mince meat in.
Yeah.
But also a pretty hearty punch as well.
Now, if I'm right in remembering, they didn't call it Christmas pie, so it became mince pie because of the Puritans, maybe. You might be able to tell me more, being a historian on stuff like that, but it's interesting how these things have evolved over time.
Yeah, I mean, the Christmas traditions are remarkable because, you know, you do something once and it's an event, you do it next year and it becomes a tradition.
Yeah.
And some of these traditions which we say hark back into pagan times, well, at the end of the day, I like to think of Christmas traditions as a sort of form of generational Chinese whisper. We all have things we love doing, we pass them on to the next generation, but we always refashion them, we reword them and we tweak them to fit the present day, and that's the wonderful thing about Christmas, that it has these kind of deep time signatures, but it's also renewed and refreshed. And you know, and the only thing I would say about the modern Christmas is we do need to bring it back to what it was traditionally. It's about good food, it's about good company, and it's about taking a break and relaxing. You know, and they're the key values. We are, I mean, this Black, was it Black Friday they call it?
Yeah.
You know, this is a stain for me on the traditional Christmas, the way it's been consumerized.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's terrible what's happening. It should be about family, food and relaxation.
Some of the medieval crafts, I mean, here in Spain in the summertime, we have these medieval fairs, and I'm sure you do in the UK as well. Of course, here it's the medieval times in Spain would be far more with the Moorish style, you know, and
So,
but we have medieval ferias here, fairs that we go to, and it's great to see some of the crafts that people are still keeping going from medieval times. And I think there's with the likes of Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings and so on, there's a renewed interest in the medieval times. And is that you're finding that people are kind of learning long lost arts again?
Well, I think there is a sense that back in the 1970s, we felt like we were losing the last of a generation of craftspeople. And, you know, 30, 40 years on, we're in a situation where we probably lost those people that did genuinely learn a craft for commercial and trade purposes. But I think we are in a kind of world now where consumers... intelligent consumers, I think, want quality, they want tradition. In some ways, we want luxury. And we've got a new generation of craftspeople coming through, learning the ancient skills, taking the time, but to produce objects which have that deep heritage. And I'm a patron of the Heritage Crafts Association, and one of the things we're always keen to do is to get funding for traditional apprenticeships, traditional crafts, because they actually underpin the skills and the knowledge of how to work with traditional materials to produce objects of beauty.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, it really is. And also, I think people are wanting something that's unique. You know, you go into well-known Swedish furniture shops and stuff like that, and, you know, it's mass-produced stuff, and some of it has its use, and it's, you know, it helps people who have not got a lot of money and so on. But I think people want something a little bit unique. They want to walk in somewhere and people to say, oh, I like your table. I've not seen it anywhere else before, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing is, I don't know about you, but I've got to that stage in life where I want to buy something. I want to buy it once. I don't want it to fall apart within 3 or 4 years and have to go out and buy something again. So, you know, I want a bed. I want to buy a bed once. I want a chair. I want to buy a chair once, you know, and I've just got to that stage. Even shoes. I went out and bought a lovely pair of old brogues the other day. I can see myself dying in them, you know. you know, there's an old saying, isn't there? You can buy fashion, but you can't buy style. And I think the thing is we are moving towards, I would like to think we're moving towards less of the kind of throwaway culture.
Yeah.
And actually buying things that mean something to us and that matter, and that therefore we want to make sure we're buying the right thing for us.
You're right on my hymn sheet, because I was thinking the other day, I need to go and buy a decent pair of brogues that are going to last me at least 5 years of wearing them every day. Brilliant. Listen, we've not even touched on most of the stuff, but time is against us. Lost traditions of weaving to beekeeping, thatching and basket making. Why don't you make somebody a basket this Christmas, you know? So there we go. Lots in the book. The book's available on talkradioeurope.com and, of course, other places as well online. But if you can go there, the book's called Craft It Spoke. C-R-A-E-F-T, the old-fashioned name there, How Traditional Crafts Are About More Than Just Making. It's by Alexander Langlands. Alexander, thank you for coming on, and wish you all the best with the book.
Dave, thanks ever so much. You take care.
Yeah, and you take care.